and welcome to Big Dating Energy. I'm Jeff Gunther, your host. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and today we're talking about dating apps, but stay tuned. I have this sort of visceral, I get the ick when I talk about dating apps, or recently when I've gone on dating apps. I used to love being on dating apps, but now I'm just like, fuck it. Capitalism is going to win every time. They always convince me to pay. I just can't stand how, like, when people like you on the dating apps and their little profile stays blurry and you don't know who the hell they are. So if you don't want to pay, then you just have to keep on swiping and liking and seeing if there's a match, or you can pay and just, like, be presented with all the people that like you, which is, you know, I prefer. But I hate handing over my money to these fat cat tech bros. I don't know. I'm trying to work through it. So when I talked to my Jenny, the person that I interviewed today, Jenny Young is a PhD. She's the creator of Burned Haystack Dating Method. You can go to Facebook and look up Burned Haystack Dating Method. It's a private Facebook group there. You can join her, and I think it's over 40,000 other people that are in that group. She's a professor of women and gender studies at the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. She has an expertise in applied rhetoric. She's an author. She's very smart. And she came up with a method on how to navigate dating apps so that if you're a woman trying to find a man, then your chances are much higher of finding a good match. And I wanted to be, like, critical. I wanted to be like, tell me about this dating method and let me poke holes in it. But I don't know. I really liked it. So I think that you'll really like it too. It just sort of feels like a nice, refreshing talk about dating apps, and kind of like invigorated me to be like, all right, if I get back on those dating apps, then all is not lost. I can find people that are good matches. So I don't know. I suggest that you listen to the whole episode, maybe even join her Facebook group if you want, and use the methods that she talks about when you craft your dating profile so that you can get on it, find good matches, and get the fuck off of it. That's what I recommend. I think that you should give me a review for this podcast because you're here and you're getting so much value out of it, and you can give back to me by giving me a review. If you want to give back to me even more, you can buy my book. Well, you can pre-order my book. It's called Big Dating Energy, just like the name of this podcast. And it's a guide on dating and relationships, starting with, like, who you can blame for all your relationship woes, which is so satisfying, blaming everybody besides yourself. But then how you can take responsibility for your part in reinforcing maybe, like, your unhealthy dating patterns. And then it goes through getting yourself on the dating apps or meeting people in real life, first date, honeymoon period, how to survive a honeymoon period, how to get into a, you know, long-term relationship if that's what you're looking for, how to maintain and sustain a healthy long-term relationship, how to break up with somebody, how to be single, and then maybe do it all over again if you want. Besides it being, like, incredibly informative and well-written, it's fucking hilarious. So highly recommend. Order your copy today. My publisher tells me that pre-orders are, like, incredibly important. So I'd love it if you did that. Okay. I think that's all I have to say to you today. I hope you enjoy my talk with Jenny, because I did. Bye. Hello, Jenny. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Yeah. Can you introduce yourself to everybody?
Sure. My name is Jenny Young. I'm a college professor in Northern Wisconsin, and I'm the creator of Burned Haystack Dating Method, which I guess we're going to talk more about in a few minutes.
We're here to talk about that. Yeah. So why don't you give us just, like, tell us a little bit about Burned Haystack Dating Method. And then I also want you to kind of, like, talk about how you developed it and what got you interested in it.
Sure. Okay. So the method itself was originally conceived of as a way to make dating app dating a lot more efficient, particularly for women who were looking for long-term monogamous partnerships, which, you know, is a difficult project on the apps right now.
Yeah. Why do you think it's a difficult project?
You know, I think there's so, like, number one reason I think is just a lot of toxicity, like cultural toxicity and misogyny and aggression. But I also think that, you know, dating apps are gamified, which I think everybody knows now, but maybe not everybody has an intricate understanding of what that actually means. But the result of that gamification is that the dating apps, instead of being a mechanism to bring people together and then proceed, have become a thing unto themselves, where they're almost operating more like a video game or, you know, Candy Crush or something. And a lot of people are fine with that because it's just another form of entertainment and interaction and media. Mm-hmm. But for people who really want to use them as the tool they were originally designed to be, that can be really frustrating. So my method was specifically designed for people who were very goal-oriented about finding a partner, and how do you kind of navigate the apps as quickly as possible so that you can be done using mm-hmm. them.
Well, let's back up just a little bit, because I'm interested in how it has been gamified. When you say it's been gamified, I mean, it does kind of feel like an app, like that's that feels like a game or feels like a social media app that you check on your phone that you sort of go on to just kind of kill time every now and then, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it also gives you dopamine hits, right?
It does, yeah.
And I think that, like, these apps, just like any other apps, like, want you to come back and continue to use them. And they also want to take your money, right? They're a business, they are capitalists, they're probably funded by investors that really want to make money back on their investment, right? So they're, it felt like to me when like dating apps were first a thing way back when, maybe like, oh God, was it like late 90s maybe that like Match came around and...
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was just sort of like this, maybe like more of a cringy thing to do,
yeah.
Like, right, to get on
and
a dating app.
Shame. Like, nobody wanted to admit that they met online. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it didn't feel like at the time that there was like an algorithm there, right? That was like trying to figure out who to match you with or how to keep you online in order to take your money. I mean, I think there was, that was there a little bit, but it was so novel and it felt like a little bit more pure back then.
Yes.
Of like, here's some people that are single that maybe have similar interests, go for it. And it wasn't too complicated. Right. And then smartphones came along. And I feel like that's when Tinder was like maybe like one of the first dating apps that was just like, we're going to fucking do this.
We're going
to figure this out. And we're going to like be app focused instead of like website focused, right? Like all the other online dating platforms were previously. And then it was Tinder and Match eventually joined, and then eventually Hinge and Bumble. And there's so many dating apps now, right? And I think that like, maybe they feel like in order to keep pace with all the other apps on your phone, like these apps are competing for your attention just like the other apps. And so because of that, they've had to gamify it. I don't know. That's my idea. That's my theory. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think Tinder, I think, was the first app to intentionally gamify. And they built something in called a ludic loop. Are you familiar with that term?
No, what's that?
LUDIC. It comes out of video gaming, and in video gaming speak, it refers to like a story arc or story pattern that has no development. It just becomes circular, but keeps you engaged and kind of hooked in. And it is based on, you had just mentioned dopamine, because what, and this is more your expertise than mine, but apparently, if we start talking about intermittent reward systems, just the anticipation of something good happening creates that dopamine hit, right? So you don't necessarily have to make a good connection. You just have to believe that you might. And then that just becomes, you know, this like self-feeding, self-perpetuating cycle, and it becomes hardwired into your brain where it is like an addiction. I guess, and the other thing is, we have different definitions of success. So like Tinder's definition of success is not people finding their soulmate. Tinder's like, and I can't remember the exact language, but it's something like lots of people having lots of conversations. So, you know, Tinder is succeeding, right? Mm-hmm. Based on their own definition. But maybe not so much for the person who's wanting to use it to find a partner. So the good thing to me, because it's very easy to get demoralized and frustrated and, you know, just want to throw your hands up. The good thing now, though, is there's so much emerging research about how these things work or don't work that once you really understand it and educate yourself, you can intentionally reject it with your behavior.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess when you say you can reject it with your behavior, does that mean that you can reject it within the app and train it so that it serves you better, or just like delete the app?
Well, you could delete the app, right? Which is what I kept doing over and over and over again before I came up with this method. And I realized this is such a waste of time. Like, I build a profile, I get frustrated, I shut down the app, I try another one. And I realized a lot of other people were doing the same thing. So I'm very pragmatic. Like, I don't think dating apps are great. I don't think they are a great solution. I don't think anybody does. The algorithms don't work. Nobody thinks the algorithms work, including the people writing the algorithms. However, it is still where the majority of couples are meeting, at least right now. So I thought, given that reality, how can we work within the apps to, number one, make them work as well and as quickly as possible, and number two, protect our mental health in a way that allows us to live our lives the way we want while the apps are kind of like operating in the background, just running in the background.
I mean, I'm interested in that, right? Like how to protect your mental health while engaging in the dating apps. There's like this part of me that wants to just burn them down, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
But like you're saying, there's so many people that are on the apps, and this feels like the primary modern way of meeting people. It's sort of like a, I don't know if it's a necessary evil, but it's definitely like a pathway to meet some, like it's one of the main ways that you're going to find somebody who's also single. But have you, I'm a little all over the place here, but you work with, you're a professor, and you said before we started the podcast that you're also, you talk to a lot of Gen Zers, right? Like college kids that are on the apps. Do you get the sense that they're using the dating apps less than maybe like millennials or Gen Xers, or do you feel like they're using it just as much?
I think they might be using it a little less. They are more fed up, like in advance, right? Like they're not even there yet. They're already fed up and saying this doesn't work. I just finished teaching a course titled The Rhetoric. I'm a rhetorician is my area. It's called The Rhetoric of Dating and Intimacy. And our final project was for the students to create a new kind of app. And they came up with brilliant ideas, and really innovative ideas. So they're not opposed to dating apps, like in general. They're just not happy with the options they have right now, which for their generation is primarily Tinder. And they don't all want hookups. You know, that's just not everybody's goal.
Let's go back to the, like, you're trying to figure out how to, like, save people's mental health at least a little bit while also using the dating apps. How does one do that?
Well, to be fair, I had no mental health goals when I started. My only goal when I started was to take what I know how to do, which is very narrow, and use it to game the apps. So my academic expertise is in a method called critical discourse analysis, or CDA. What is that? So it's a really fancy word for being able to read coded language quickly and accurately and identify patterns and figure out what people are revealing without intending to reveal it. And that's maybe the key. That's why it's so useful in the dating apps, because people are giving you all kinds of information that they don't intend to be sharing, both through their words and also through the images they select. Even, and this gets into another field called semiotics, which is basically the study of signs and symbols. And I know this sounds super academic, but we do this kind of stuff in the Facebook group all day long. And these are not, you don't have to be an academic to do this. I have 18 and 19 year olds in my classes who become wizards at applying these methods like that. It's like unlocking, you know, it's like handing people a key and all of a sudden you start seeing things you never saw before. So the whole method hinges on that. And I was really just trying to game the system for myself because I wanted to meet someone and I felt like it was just taking way too long. And then the second rule of critical discourse analysis, in like academia is that you use what you learn to make the world a better place. And so I thought, what can I do? I can share this. Mm-hmm. I can teach it. I can make it free and openly accessible. And then I published a few articles. One of those that was in HuffPost went pretty viral, and then the group exploded. And what I started noticing is that a lot of the feedback I was getting, in addition to like I started meeting way better people, a lot of the feedback was like, I haven't met somebody yet and I don't even care because I'm just so much happier. It's not taking over my life anymore. I know I'm not alone. I've, you know, kept questioning, is it me? Am I doing something wrong with these apps? And then hearing from all these other people saying, no, like we're having the same experience. So that's been the surprising part of it to me.
Yeah. And that's based on sort of like your methodology and then having people view the app with like a very specific lens.
Yes.
That you're and like you're giving people, you're showing people like what lens to put on in order to like scan all the dating profiles.
I have 10 rules. I have 10 rules for managing your app. Yeah.
Oh, let's go through those rules. I want to know what they are.
I have 3 rules for setting up the profile, and those are, I mean, that's probably not a whole lot different, but than what you'll see other places, but it's the app management that's the bigger deal. You want me to just go through them in order, or you want to take them a few at a time? You want the most popular ones?
Let's go through them in order, and then we'll see where we go with each of them.
Okay. I'll give you the brief versions, and then you can decide. Got it. Okay. Rule number one, the app is a tool. It's not a place to live. And I use a toothbrush analogy. Like you use your toothbrush twice a day and you set it down and go about your day. You don't carry your toothbrush around with you and like pet it and check on it and tap at it. It's a tool. You use it and you put it away.
Well, that's you're already like starting to create like a really different relationship with an app. And it's tricky because that's not how we're trained with any of the apps. And that's not how the apps want to be treated. They'd be offended by that, right?
They're super offended by it.
You have to be like incredibly intentional and mindful and thoughtful just right off the bat, right?
You absolutely do. Yeah. This method is simple. It's not easy. It's powerful, but it's not easy.
Because we've been trained for the last 15 years on our phones to not do what you just said for the first rule.
Right.
I support this. I don't think, like, I think that it can be done. You just have to be deliberate with your behavior. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And that's the benefit, I think, of the Facebook group is there's now like a community movement around it and people encourage each other, you know, like just set it down and like some of the other rules we'll get into.
So don't check it when you're bored. don't check it when you're bored.
Right. Yeah. Don't look at it as a game or a form of entertainment. It should only be a tool. It should not have a bigger role in your life than that.
Okay. Rule
number two, focus on messaging over everything else. I mean, people hire profile builders, profile writers. They use fake pictures. They lie in their profile. They have ChatGPT write it. You can get a lot more information from a back and forth message. Now, even that, I mean, you know, there's scammers out there. There's all kinds of ways that can be co-opted and exploited as well. Yeah. But I think it's a better metric than the profile.
Interesting. So, I mean, yeah, we'll go over kind of like looking at a profile and what to look for. But you're saying like the messaging is where you find out who that person really is and if there's some sort of interest or connection.
And also, like, we actually created a messaging hierarchy. I could share this with you. But basically, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure where it's like if they say this, then good, go to the next level. If they say this, go to the next level. Or if they say this, no, you're done. Block, go on to the next person. So
block,
why block? Okay, so I'll get to that.
Sorry.
1 second. That's the most popular rule. But okay, rule number three, no notifications, which really just supports rule number one. And I also tell people, like, you don't need to respond to everything within 3 minutes. That kind of conveys a sense of desperation, right? Like you should have a life that's occupying you that you can't respond to every time somebody likes you on match.com or whatever. Okay. So that's rule number three. Rule number four is the most popular rule. and it's called block to burn.
What so does that mean?
Can we talk about the burning metaphor real quick first?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I like metaphors because I'm an English professor, and I decided I needed a metaphor for this method. And I started out by thinking, well, what's everybody trying to do? They're trying to find a needle in a haystack, right? And so I Google searched. This was late one night when I was like very lonely and demoralized over online dating. And so I Google searched, how do you find a needle in a haystack? And do you know the answer to this? Did you already know the answer? I did not.
I did not know the answer, no.
Okay, well, the answer is you burn the haystack to the ground. Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right? It makes perfect sense. And yet, like, I had never thought of it. And needles are metal. They don't burn. So like, right. If you burn the haystack, there you are. Right? There's mm-hmm. the needle. So that's kind of what the method is premised upon, that your goal is to not pick through every piece of hay. Your goal is actually to obliterate 99% of the field. So all that's left are the potential needles.
Hmm.
Okay. So rule number four is block to burn, meaning burn the haystack. And the reason I tell people to block is because that's the only way to prevent the algorithms from recircling matches to you. Like if you just say no or hit the X or any of that, you're going to see those people again. All the apps have blocking mechanisms built in so that you can block in a way that doesn't hurt the other person. Like it doesn't, you know, put a mark against them or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we use blocking really, really liberally.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting down to business, you know.
Totally.
You don't want to mess around. And
that is right.
That makes sense.
Okay, so that's rule number four. Rule number five. So rule number five was originally called no fighting with men, but it should really just be no fighting with anybody because it's a waste of time. And it's so hard not to do because there's so many people who say so many terrible things. But if you give energy to that, you're now spending your own time and energy on exactly what you don't want. And that's a cosmic problem in the universe. Like if mm-hmm. we want to talk about energy return or whatever, you just sure. got to not put energy there.
Got it.
Rule number six is don't be a pen pal. And I think everybody knows this is kind of a big problem on dating apps. And you kind of get a sense for when, like, it's just not going anywhere. And I tell people that block to burn and move on.
Do you think that, like, I like the don't be a pen pal. What about, like, the women that you're working with that, like, that want to do lots of messaging for a while? Do you try to discourage them from doing that?
No. What I like about this method is that anybody can take it and customize it. So I tell people if that's something that makes you feel more comfortable and it, mm-hmm. you know, it gives you like a more gradual on-ramp to meeting in real life, then yeah, have at it. Nobody's being harmed, right? But what I hear more often is women saying, yeah, I guess he just wants to message forever until we die. We'll die of messaging. Okay, that's rule number six. Rule number seven is a little bit tricky, and it can't be done on all apps. But rule number seven is set your geography, but don't share your location. Because a lot of the people in my platform, they don't want to meet someone who's just looking for a night of fun, you know, while they're visiting Portland on business or whatever.
Right.
However, some of the apps, you don't have a choice. So that rule is not always applicable.
Yeah. So you're trying to avoid people that are just passing through.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, I can see an argument that that's short-sighted, right? Especially in a post-pandemic world. People are more mobile. Maybe that could turn into real love. I think it's less likely, but it is possible. Yeah. So,
I mean, I think with a lot of these rules, there can be arguments made against them.
Oh, yeah.
If you want, right?
Like yeah.
There's...
Sure.
Yeah, there's lots of reasons you might want to customize these rules for yourself or you're trying to get down to like brass tacks. You're trying to like be like, what's the mission here?
Yes.
What's like the most like direct like path to find what you're looking for? And you're going to have to like make some tough decisions sometimes or be really boundaried, right?
Really boundaried and willing to take some risks. Like people say to me frequently, aren't you afraid you're going to miss a good connection? And the answer to that is yes. However, I'm more afraid of missing good connections if I spent my time following every potential connection. That's just a different way of wasting time. It's kind of like, I mean, all of life is a calculated risk, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
We all have to make these decisions. I mm-hmm. make them toward the ruthless end when it comes to dating apps.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, rule number 8, we already touched on, but it's no ludic looping and mm-hmm. no attractions of deprivation, which I think the other term for that is, if you're an anxiously attached person, you're probably not going to be happy if you're spending all your time with someone who is an avoidantly attached person, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, we don't want to attach human value to people's attachment styles, but knowing something about yours might be helpful. But I don't know, you're the psychologist. Do you believe in attachment theory? Like, is this a useful heuristic for dating app behavior or no?
I mean, yeah. So therapists are all over the spectrum, actually, on this, of like, if an anxious and an avoidant should team up, like some therapists mm-hmm. are just like, no, not worth the hassle. It's going to be too difficult. You're coming from like two different worlds. And other therapists that are more like me maybe are mm-hmm. just like, well, it can be a really healing relationship. But both of you have to put the work into it, have to have like a decently high emotional intelligence, a good amount of awareness about like how you behave and what your attachment style like does to you and how someone else experiences it. You know, there's mm-hmm. like, there's lots of like great things about dating somebody that maybe has like an opposite attachment style, but mm-hmm. you have to put in the work. And if you're not, if you're both not willing to put in the work and try to find compromises and embrace feeling uncomfortable sometimes, then go ahead and don't do it. Like, then go ahead and try to find somebody who's has a similar attachment style, or try to find that needle in the haystack who's maybe a little bit more secure. Although there's like plenty of like securely attached folks out there. It doesn't have to be difficult to find. If like this method that you're applying so far, it makes sense to me that you'd be like, don't fuck around with that shit, you know? That could be a waste of time, and it takes a lot of work. And if we're just trying to like find somebody who's like a good match without like really getting each other outside of your comfort zone, and then I get it. It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's different than if you met someone in real life and got to know them over time. I feel like you'd have a better chance of working through some of those differences than you might from a dating app connection. So I do think mm-hmm. like I would approach this process differently in an mm-hmm. emotional way mm-hmm. than I would meeting someone in real life.
But are you saying like you're kind of like, are you saying that like people should ask the guy, like, what is your attachment style? Or is it just something you're sensing, like, I think that you're picking up on?
Yeah, I think it's more sensing. I think I would have reservations about asking people that. For one thing, I'm not sure everybody's even part of that discourse. I'm not sure people always, you know, judge themselves accurately. I talk to a lot of women who say, you know, I send him all these messages and they're so thoughtful, and I read his profile and I ask him interesting questions, and then he's like, yeah. And that's how the messaging pattern goes. And like that, I would say, then don't engage in that, because it's not like you're already frustrated and you haven't met this person yet. Mm-hmm. So being able to identify those kind of dynamics in early communication by people's mm-hmm. language use or lack of language use mm-hmm. seems to me a really helpful tool in burning the haystack.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So we're down to the final two rules now. Mm-hmm. Rule 9, okay, I take a lot of flack for this one, so I'll tell you what it is, and then we can come back to it. Rule number 9 is no men who can't plan the date. Okay, so I'm prepared to defend that. Rule 10 is treat the process of online dating more like a job search and not like a takeout order. If you order, you know, whatever, Taco Bell on Uber Eats, like, it's, you want it to show up like that, right? you don't really expect it to be high quality. It's Taco Bell, but you want it there fast. But there's not really that much at stake there. If you were searching for a job, you'd build a really solid, accurate, robust resume. You'd send it, you'd do your research, you'd learn about companies, you'd send it out, and then you'd sit back and wait, and you'd recognize this might take several months, but I want to find a job that's a really good fit for me, that I can, grow in this company and, move into other positions or whatever. And I think for people who are looking for long-term partnership, that's a better thought model than, calling up an Uber.
Yeah, for sure. But like we've sort of talked about, we're trained to just hit a button and have the thing on our doorstep, right?
Yeah.
And now dating apps kind of feel that way, or it feels like you can use them that way, or maybe they want to use them that way. Yeah, right. So to take a more pragmatic approach that takes time, where you do your research and you don't jump ahead, that I love that. And also, but you're it's hard to control your emotions sometimes.
It is, yeah.
Right? You could be coming from a place of loneliness or desperation. Right. You could connect with somebody or it feels like, oh my God, it's all green flags and this chemistry is so hot and sexy. There's lots of opportunities to just be like, fuck it, I'm jumping right in.
Right, yeah.
Which, I also don't recommend doing that. It's good. I think a lot of these rules, you have to be really mindful and intention based, and that's not how we've been trained, but this is how we should be, right? So, but let's go back to rule number 9.
Okay.
Remind me of rule number 9 again.
Rule number 9 is no men who can't plan the date. So let me explain that one, okay. Because it is, to be transparent, that's a very unfair rule to a certain percentage of men who can and do plan dates. And I've met many of them. So that's not an impossibility or a unicorn type of scenario. However, I'm a feminist academic and I understand about labor inequity and power dynamics and patriarchal structures. And I don't think we're yet in a place of equality. I think there's a lot of evidence to support that. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't use this as a judgment factor. What I like about this rule is if you meet, I'm a middle-aged woman or whatever. If I meet a guy my age who's able to, navigate the logistics of making a reservation, finding a cool park near that restaurant to walk through, or even just a really great coffee shop that's a good location, none of that really matters in and of itself. We're talking about one date that's going to be over in a matter of hours. But the ability and the willingness to do that indicates a level of having your shit together that might really lend someone toward being a more equity-minded partner in a relationship.
You defend that really well.
Thank you.
You already sort of we're acknowledging that maybe here's some of the shortcomings, but all in all, when it comes down to it, there's a benefit
I also tell people, I'm not saying that women shouldn't weigh in on the date. Maybe planning the date looks like co-creating a date together, which is also awesome, right? Mm-hmm. You just want some level of equal participation or good teamwork. Mm-hmm. In jumping into this thing. And then, I certainly wouldn't say, he needs to plan every date and he needs to pay for every date, because that's what love is. I don't believe any of that nonsense. Mm-hmm. I'm using rhetorical clues that I think can be extrapolated out to larger conclusions. It's inductive reasoning.
I think that it's going to be, there's a bunch of lazy guys out there that are not going to be able to be good matches. And that's the point. You're not looking for somebody who's maybe lazy or not lazy, but just sort of is on the fence, doesn't quite know
what they want. Yeah, super passive. Yeah.
Very passive. Yeah. Does this, though, attract a certain type of guy that maybe is that can be like unlikable? Like, is it, could this like attract a guy who's like really dominant and controlling and opinionated and a lot? Like, is that a risk?
I think that is a risk. However, mm-hmm. we're really good at reading messaging patterns to root that out. This was like a big topic of discussion in the Facebook group yesterday, because someone had met a guy who was, you know, he was like, well, I'm an alpha male and I like to lead and I'm really successful and I look great. Like, I mean, he was maybe an over the top example, but the more you read these things, the patterns emerge pretty clearly. And I think, I mean, you know how the dating apps are, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's a mixed bag. And mm-hmm. and I think any method can lead to any number of pitfalls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. True. Is this susceptible? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So when you're like scanning a profile, what are the certain things that, what are like, you know, green flags? What are red flags? What are things you're looking for and what are things you're trying to avoid?
So I like when people use their profiles to tell their potential audience things about themselves, things they like to do, things they care about, you know, pictures of themselves out sort of in the world. What I don't like is when people use their profiles to tell other people how to be. You know, you need to be fun loving and not take yourself too seriously. And sort of all this very like what we call second person directive in grammar speak. But there's a lot of it. And again, that like starts to pop out at you the more you look at it. So I look for someone who's able to sort of take the options and the questions that are there, and they vary from app to app, and use it to give a really concrete and specific picture of who they are. So like, I'm bored by dating apps that say, you know, whatever, I like to laugh. Well, everybody likes to laugh. Like, that's not new news. So, you know, I'm more interested in the same kind of good details that make really good TV series writing good or really good fiction good. Mm-hmm. So I very much look at it through a writer standpoint. Most of my writing publications are actually in humor. So humor is really important to me. And, and I have a very nuanced conception of what that means. Like, I won't swipe on guys who say they're fluent in sarcasm, because that's like, sarcasm is the lowest form of humor. And also that's become like a cliche in itself to claim fluency in sarcasm. So I'm looking for like a more nuanced display of humor. I bring a lot of influencers into my platform, yourself included. You're very popular in the Bird Haystack.
Oh,
even though you're not allowed to join it, but you're super popular in it anyway. I would be happy to like invite you in as a guest.
Sure.
But I also link to a lot of other influencers that show like, you know, this is what your six profile pictures should be, or here's how your profile should read. So I try to make it really comprehensive in terms of like a teaching site. I think of it, you know, I'm building a curriculum is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A curriculum for dating.
Yeah. And I think that like, this is, it's really needed because it feels like the Wild West out there sometimes.
Yes.
Right.
It does,
when you're looking for like, I think that like one of the things that can really keep a couple connected for a very long time is sharing the same sense of humor.
Yeah.
And being funny. But sometimes it's hard to like convey a sense of humor or how funny you actually are through these little tiny snippets, right? Of text. But it seems like you're just like, fuck it. Like, I want some sort of energy, some like silly, fun energy.
I think I would follow up a connection even in the absence of obvious humor if everything else looked good, because some people like you really can't tell until you're in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if we got through an entire date and I was still like, you know, it seemed to be like a comedic desert, then probably I would. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And when you're saying like what you're looking for in a profile, are you also like telling the women to like create a profile similarly, or is this just for like what you're looking for in men's profiles?
No, we talk quite a bit, and I've put a lot of resources out about how to build a profile that might work better. I solicited a collection of successful profiles, so profiles that led to ongoing monogamous partnerships. I solicited those from the group, and then I took them through my whole very nerdy critical discourse analysis method, and I wrote specific question sets to analyze these profiles. So I analyzed all the successful profiles, and then I identified all the commonalities and the patterns, and I published that with a hidden link in the group, but hidden and available to all 30,000 people in the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm trying to provide really usable, concrete information about how to make these apps work better.
Yeah. And what are some of the typical commonalities when it comes to a successful dating profile?
Okay. So, and I'm doing this from memory. I should have that document pulled up, but, concreteness and specificity, tell people who you are in clear ways that people can visualize. So that doesn't sound like, I'm super chill and I like to take it easy and have fun. That means mm-hmm. nothing to anybody. It's not memorable. It doesn't draw anyone in. If you love to go ice kayaking, which people do up here, or snow biking, that's something that, is more easy to visualize. Instead of saying, I like this kind of movie, name the actual movie. Maybe somebody else loves that movie. Maybe it's their favorite movie. Same thing with songs. You might find that there's an intersection there. Something to forge these connections, I think, is really important. The other thing, and this has been surprising for me and for a lot of people, the profiles that have been most successful in Burnt Haystack, at least the ones I've analyzed, have laid out very clear boundaries about what they do and do not want, while also, and this is the key, while also controlling the tone so that it comes across as engaging and lighthearted, even if we're talking about really serious things. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to define without looking at examples, but I did publish a bunch of examples that people shared with me in this paper so that people could be like, oh, that's what that looks like. It doesn't look like yelling at or scolding other people. It looks like I know exactly who I am and what I want.
Yeah, I looked at some of those examples and it's impressive, and it's hard to pull off, right?
It is. It's really hard to pull off. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, I don't know. So one of the feelings that I experienced when I was reading through that blog that you posted, and you gave all the dating profile, successful dating profiles, and I was looking at them. I loved it. And I think that I would have swiped right or messaged a lot of those profiles.
Okay.
And also the thing that kind of made me, I don't know, nervous or anxious or something was I was just oh, I'm feeling intimidated.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Because it's, and I'm not saying don't do what you're saying, and it's okay that I'm feeling a little intimidated, but intimidated and almost just oh my, it's I know exactly what picture you're painting. Yeah. I get it. There's sort of this is a no bullshit kind of thing with, right. Some LOLs sprinkled in, Right. Yeah. So it's doing what you're wanting it to do, I think. But there's almost I then start to think is my profile, can it match this tone? And is it is it as direct? I'm not quite sure. And I wonder if there's again, not that this is a bad thing and it could weed out people that are not a good match, but have you gotten feedback from any other men that are looking at these profiles being I'm intimidated, or I don't know what I would say, or anything like that?
No, I just published this last week. So I'm loving hearing your feedback. I can also tell you, Therapy mm-hmm. Jeff, if you want me to set you up, I can totally set you up. I guarantee your profile would not scare anyone away. I think women and men, and I realize this is very binary, and I also want to say this method has not just led to heterosexual pairings. Right. It's yes. getting much more diverse than that. But if we're going to talk in generalities for a minute, I think men and women do read profiles a little bit differently. And you, so I want to go back to what you said just a second ago. You said you felt a little intimidated, but you'd also swipe.
Mm-hmm.
Or message?
Yeah. Okay. I would message or swipe right, yeah, but I'm a little scared. Not scared, just like, yeah, just like, there's something, this is, and again, this is, this might be all my stuff okay. that I'm like projecting on to the, to these profiles. There's almost like, you know, if you see a profile and it's very vague, mm-hmm. Then I get to project whatever I want to project onto that.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I get to like paint this little picture and have a fantasy. Yeah. There's not right. a lot of space for me to do that in the profiles that you're, that are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is the point, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it is, but I've never thought about it in the way that you just described, but I think that's dead on accurate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of trouble in like finding a vague profile and projecting all of your fantasies on it, because those fantasies are probably going to be wrong. And
right.
And they're going to be maybe doing that to me, and it's a whole thing and it doesn't really work out. So you're just like, put yourself out there right away.
Well, and also, so what you just said, which is that you would feel a little intimidated, but also still explore it. Like, to me, that's actually the kind of person that someone should want to meet if they're looking for a partnership, because that's what partnership looks like, right? Is being mm-hmm. willing to take a little emotional risk every now and then to get to know someone beyond what you might think you already know of them. So to me, that if what you just said, if we could, you know, apply that to mm-hmm. to men kind of at large, that would actually bode well for the kind of matches most of the people in my platform are looking for.
Mm, yeah. And it feels like I have to kind of like step up my game now, whether yeah. that means like fixing up my profile a bit or being very clever about the message that I send first, you know,
or like even more responsive.
Mm,
mm-hmm, honestly, yeah. the bar is pretty low. it is.
Yeah. There's also like another experience I've had on dating apps is that there are, it feels like, you know, I'm 43 and the past maybe like 3 or 4 years I've been like on and off the dating apps, and mm-hmm. I've almost felt like spoiled. Like, there's so many like amazing women out there and there's a lot to choose from. And I know that like either there's like not as many like great guys to choose from, or they just don't know how to like represent themselves, which might probably be the case even more, that like they don't know how to like create a good profile or interact in a like nice, cute, connecting way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's definitely true. I also think, and maybe I'm biased, but it, what you just said sort of supports it too. You know, I work with all these women who are, you know, they're smart and successful and beautiful, and mm-hmm. they're just not. I interviewed another psychologist for this project, and he said that the reality is that right now in this age group, there is a shortage of adequate American men.
That's what it seems like. And again, yeah. I also get a lot of questions from other people or journalists, people are interviewing, asking me like, why is that?
Yeah.
Why is there a shortage? I have my opinions and I'll tell you what I think.
Yeah, I want to know.
Do you have any thoughts though of like why that may be?
Well, I mean, we're still living in a patriarchal society mm-hmm. in which people have grown up with a lot of male entitlement, maybe specifically white male entitlement for, yeah. and this gets worse as the men get older, because at a certain age, I mean, all men had to do was like show up and be mediocre, and that was fine, right? That was good. Mm-hmm. So that's always been the goal. And then the other thing I say, and I don't know, this might be unfair, but I think it seems true. So I know a lot of people in miserable marriages, right? I know a lot of women who stay in miserable marriages. Mm-hmm. These guys are the ones that women wouldn't even stay with. Like, it was so terrible that they weren't willing to even, there was like a level of misery that was untenable compared to other mass levels of misery. So, mm-hmm. and that's who's out there, because the people that, you know, that like someone like me or someone in my age group is trying to meet, it's not someone who's partnering up for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. They've been out there for a while. in, you know, maybe a variety of scenarios.
Right. Yeah.
But what is your theory? Why is there such a shortage?
Well, I mean, I grew up in like the, I was born in 1980. So I grew up in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And I didn't have any role models that, you know, men that were role models that were like really emotionally intelligent. Right. My dad wasn't, and he loved sports. And so I loved sports too, you know?
Yeah.
And also like the kids, my peer group that I grew up with, like the more emotional the boys were, the more weaker you were, or the more unattractive you were, and you're not manly. Right. So it was really like, do not get in touch with your feelings. Instead be like tough and gruff and everything, you know? And then I decided to become a therapist in college. And that's when I like finally gained emotional intelligence. I had very little of it when I was growing up because nobody bothered to teach me because nobody thought that I needed it because whatever. But the only like the main reason that I have like now more emotional intelligence is because I work in the field. But that's not typically what's happening is, you know, there's lots of other. This is like I'm in a pretty women-dominated field, right?
Yeah.
And also the content that I make for Therapy Jeff and put out there, a little over 85% of my followers are women.
Interesting. And okay.
They do – like they're watching my videos and doing the emotional labor in relationships, right? And it's very rarely – I get noticed out in public and maybe like – less than five times it's been a man that has like come up to me and said hello, when like hundreds of times it's been women. So I don't even know. I think 85% is probably too much. It's probably like more like 90 in the 90s percentile of people that follow me. So because of society, because of culture, because like men just had to be kind of like good enough, because there's like this narrative of like find a man that has a job that makes money, you know, like that's like actually the most important thing. Now it's really shifted. It's been shifting. It feels like there's been like there was a more dramatic shift in the pandemic all of a sudden. Is what I noticed, where it's just like, let's up the like emotional game of men. But in doing that, that also sort of like has coincided with this like polarized political environment, right? Where like now maybe like the right or more conservatives are just like really railing against any sort of like emotional intellect, right?
Right.
So I think that's like that's done something, but I think that like that there's like there is a younger generation that is now valuing like emotional maturity. There's also like these like funny little, you know, there's like pushback on therapy speak. Do you know about that term, therapy speak? And it's funny because like therapy speak in the 80s and 90s, we didn't say therapy speak. We said psychobabble.
Right.
Which is even more fucked up, right?
Right,
Where you'd like, if somebody was like using like emotional or like psychological terms or to express their feelings or analyze a situation, then that's psychobabble and you're immediately diminished.
Right.
Now it's therapy speak, which is not as bad of a term, but there's still like people are now also like skeptical of like therapy speak. So now that like some of the men are becoming a little more versed and emotional intelligence, but only because they're learning about it on social media, maybe, which isn't enough. Right. And maybe they're going to therapy, but they're not doing like the deep work. And maybe they're only going to therapy because they want to put "I'm going to therapy" on their profile or something.
Yeah, like, apparently that's a big problem right now.
Yeah, like, it is a problem. Yeah. So there's. So, like, the men are still doing the minimum. Not all of them, not all men, that whole thing, you know, but, like, and I do think, like, as you get older, there's these men that have, like, they're leaving relationships because the women are, like, I can't fucking deal with this shit. Yeah. And the men maybe feel like they can, like, join communities of other men that are angry at women.
Yes.
Right? So
if you can...
There's a lot of incels, and it feels so much better to blame women than to work on yourself. right? Than to actually grow, right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of opportunities for men to not work on themselves. There's lots of opportunities for men to be mad at women and continue to point the finger at them because it's their peers are doing it, or that feels more fun to be angry or something.
Yeah.
And there's still a part of us that feels like, you know, it's weak to be emotionally sensitive or intelligent or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still, and probably always will, get messages, you know, most common things when women come up to me in public and they're like, oh, I love your content. One of the most common things they say is like, it's because of you that I broke up with my boyfriend.
Oh, that probably gives you mixed emotions, doesn't it?
It does. I'm like, great that you're figuring out what your standards are. Weird, because I'm not telling anyone to break, but I get it that that's maybe like something that you're getting. And then I also get messages, private messages from men being like, fuck you. It's because of you that my girlfriend broke up. Like, they are. Right? Yeah. So there's like this anger and like that I'm creating inadvertently with men.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's like an interesting thing that's happening.
It is really interesting. I mean, that all, like what you're saying, I feel like we see that coming through on the apps too. And I, you know, my expertise really is just in like language word analysis and stuff like that. So I try to try to help people navigate the apps and then I'm out. And then I will frequently say, like, let's see what Therapy Jeff has to say about this. Because if somebody starts getting into, you know, like relationship talk, then, you know, we're in a different arena, right? But everything you're describing also makes sense with what I see like in these initial communications.
Yeah.
Especially with the anger. Yeah.
There's a lot of anger out there, and you know, like I get it. It's, I think a lot of the men who are angry are feeling really helpless.
Yeah,
they're feeling left behind. Like all of a sudden, they're not as attractive or as they thought that they could be, and they want to blame women or Therapy Jeff or whoever. That's like kind of like trying to create this like shift, this growth in this population, and they can't keep up and they feel like it's too confusing. Right. And it's sometimes it's harder to like learn things the older you get because you feel like you're behind. It's like you don't have this brain that can like really kind of like make connections fast. I'm not trying to give any excuses. Like I've seen plenty of men, but
I think you're right. And I think the anger piece of it has been a surprise to me. One of my colleagues here at the university, who's actually the dean of our college, goes by Anger Professor on Instagram. We talk social media a lot, and we realized that like our intersection is angry men. And you know, like he's interested in that as an emotion researcher. I'm interested in it and how it comes out on the apps. But something you just said made me think, like, I almost wonder, it's, you know, there's an archetype of like the nagging woman, right? Or the critiquing woman. It kind of seems like some of these guys approach the apps like angry about some hypothetical woman they've conjured up. It is so off-putting, but we're going off on a tangent here, but it's, That in and of itself is a problem on the dating apps. And then the fact that they're, you know, like threatening you and blaming you for the fact that their wives left or whatever, that it's clearly, this is a deep-seated problem.
It is a deep-seated problem. Yeah. And back to when I was like, when I was looking at the profiles that you cited in your recent blog post, and I was like, ooh, there's a part of me that's intimidated. And I want to engage with that. And that's like really curious. It's like, it's a challenge of like, oh, this person's going to challenge me to grow, going to like challenge me to like be my best self. Right. Like, and that's who I want to be in these relationships. While another man that might be a little bit angry is going to see them, be like, they're going to feel intimidated and be like, what the fuck? They're asking for too much and I can't meet these needs. You know, right. Like, and you know, you're weeding those people out. You don't want Yeah, so I get it. It's kind of, and that could be like working for you and everybody else that's using these tools.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
Is there anything else that you want to like add to this discussion?
I guess just that I'm really, really grateful for the women and women. It's primarily women, but a lot of non-binary people too. I'm grateful for the way in which the group has taken this up as a grassroots initiative that's got like a force behind it now that way transcends me or anything I could have done on my own. I had no social media following whatsoever when I started this. And I'm starting to think of this more now as, like, I posted a reel about this earlier, that it really is kind of a feminist revolution, a micro feminist revolution that's building steam. And I feel like the more people, and I don't even mean in terms of like applying my method, but just getting really critical about the dynamics and the toxicity that goes on in the apps and sort of collectively deciding that we can meet people online and it does not have to be like this. Like there are dialogues we can have, we can talk to each other, we can support each other. And that's what this group has come together to do in ways that just have delighted me and entertained me. There's a lot of really great humor in the group too. So I guess you let me talk for a minute here. I'm just thanking everybody who's been part of this. Invite your friends so we can continue to nudge the culture in the right direction.
Of course. Is there an app that you like the best where you're able to like apply these things and filters in the best way possible?
No. I think the apps, I hate them all. I think the apps, first of all, vary a lot by region and by age. So like for someone in my position with my goals, I have found Bumble and Hinge to be the most effective. I think they're probably the two most popular right now. Mm-hmm. But I also think the apps are completely arbitrary, right? Like I think how you use them matters a lot more than the app that you're on. And also, I mean, clearly there's an element of luck here, right? Like you don't know who's on which apps. Like we always refer to Match.com as the land of sad old men, but but that said, and your breakdown of the dating apps where you characterized all of them, so brilliant, so nuanced and specific. Like you just absolutely nailed it. I put that reel up and everybody went nuts for it. However, we do have women who met, you know, their needles on oldschoolmatch.com or
sure.
eHarmony, God forbid, with its subversive Christian messaging.
That's so weird.
I find eHarmony to be unsettling. I find OkCupid to be chaotic. Tinder is a hookup app and it presents itself like a hookup app. That said, I know people who've found their soulmates on Tinder.
Sure.
And there's new apps emerging, you know?
Yeah, there's lots of new apps emerging. Yeah. And, you know, if any of those apps get even the least bit popular, then the Match group will try to, like, buy them up, right?
Yes, they will.
And then make it into, you know, a money-making machine. But it seems like whatever app you use, as long as you're intentional, you can apply lots of these rules and filters in order to, like, find somebody who's a good match, as long as you just, like, don't fuck around. And you, like, train yourself to not use the app as just sort of, like, dopamine hits, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's fun. That little, like, app video of, like, here's the general vibe of all the apps. It's one of my favorite pieces of content. And it's in my book, Big Dating Energy, that comes out in July. But my publisher was like, this is a little mean. You're being kind of mean. We might want to think about this. And I was like, but that's what's so fun.
Yeah. You're speaking the truth. Sometimes the truth is painful. Yeah. That doesn't mean it's not the truth, right?
Right. I hope that you and a team that you create can like build an app one day that like is perfect for all the things that you've come up with.
That would be a great project.
That would be a great project. Yeah. If people want to join the group, where can they find it?
Just search Burned Haystack Dating on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm Word Case Scenario. I don't know if you can link that or not, but
I'll link it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can join from Word Case Scenario also.
Great. It's been so good talking to you. And
me too.
Yeah, let's keep in touch and talk again.